about to introduce our guest today. I'm going to just give you a quick summary of what I know. I've actually met and interviewed him several times already, so I think I can do this off the top of my head. His first big time in the spotlight was as in politics, actually, in Ohio. He was mayor of Cincinnati. I think he was also a city councilman. He also ran for governor there. And in the 80s, he became a commentator, I think, on the TV news. Back when they used to have these political commentators, he would do commentary there. In the early 90s, he started some TV show with his name in it. I think you guys know a little bit about that. And what's kind of interesting is that I think that led him to his, serious fame and fortune. In 2006 was kind of where he took a little bit of a left turn. At first, he's really into politics, and he actually became a radio talk show host for Air America for a couple of years. I think it was 2005, 2006. And about that time, he also decided to join a show called Dancing with the Stars. And believe it or not, I mean, he did extremely well in terms of the fans. Fans loved him. He finished in the top five. Quite an accomplishment. I know he's pretty modest about his dancing abilities, but he did quite well. And that led him actually to hosting America's Got Talent on NBC, the top summer show on NBC. He did that for a couple of years. And he continues to talk widely across the country about politics and entertainment. And his show is on three times a day on WATL if you want to catch him doing his thing there. But if you want to hear him talk about in the entertainment industry, a little bit of politics, whatever he feels like talking about, here is Jerry Springer.
Thank you very much for inviting me. And I always start off by saying, may you never be on my show. And I can see for a couple of you that's a little late, but no. And I'm loving it here. I'm here this week performing in the musical Chicago, the national tour. I was lucky enough to do that in London this summer and then a month on Broadway, and now I'm doing Atlanta here, and next week we'll do Philadelphia, and then I got to get back to my real life. But anyway, so I love being here. Thank you very much for having me, and I will not sing and dance during this presentation, which should be for your real pleasure. I'm going to talk about a number of varied things, and then we'll open it up to questions, keep this rather informal. But I can't help but note, obviously, this is 9/11. And actually this morning as I was getting ready, I was watching, I think it was MSNBC, where they had the coverage that they had 8 years ago today. And you saw the clock, so you literally relived it, and the horror of it. And then I tried to put that in perspective of all the things that are happening in America today. And you remember 8 years ago, the initial shock, disbelief, and unsettling. It was almost like, wait a second, we've lived our lives here in America, but it was like the first night we went to sleep worried, oh my gosh, are we really safe in America? And so it was frightening. It really was. And it was frightening for our kids. And, we all had the conversation, with our families. So it was tough. And the immediate response was, certainly in my lifetime, the country came together like never before. And we would do whatever it took. And suddenly everyone loved New Yorkers. And all the things that normally are part of our conversations weren't there. And you could see the wonderful human stories of how we responded to the firefighters and the first responders and the people running away from the building with that cloud of smoke, dust, debris, and store owners saying, come in here to strangers of every color, of every religion. No question, what language did you speak? Nothing. Everyone, it was humanity reaching out. And it was, in a sense, America at its best. Everyone cared about everybody else. Prejudice went out the window. Now let's bring it forward 8 years. And 3,000 people died on that day because of that attack, that horrific attack. And we responded with whatever was necessary. Even some of the responses were ill-advised, like starting a war in Iraq. But we spent whatever was necessary. We spent every dollar we could. We sacrificed lots of young people's lives in the wars. We just would pay any price, bear any burden. Admittedly, we went into the wrong country, one of the wrong countries, but we were going to do something. Initially, everyone was supportive. And then, particularly with Afghanistan, totally supportive. Now, I'm thinking, 0.001% of all Americans may leave this earth because they're unlucky enough to be in a building that gets hit by a plane. Maybe 0.001%. 99.9% of us will leave this earth because of an accident or an illness. So I start thinking, if virtually all of us are one day going to leave this planet because of an illness or an accident, why aren't we, shouldn't we be defending against that at least as much as we would defend against a plane hitting a building we're in? Where's the logic? And yet, every time we talk about health care for everybody, oh, what's that going to cost? No. And all these excuses come. All these excuses. There are some problems we don't know how to solve. But having health insurance for everyone, we know how to solve it. We may not want to do it, but we know how to solve it. For example, we have Medicare, right? Most senior citizens figure, okay, I just got to be 65, Medicare works. It works. So if it works for people 65 and older, why can't it work for people under 65? So we know how to do it. You can come back at me and say, yeah, but that's going to be expensive if we have Medicare for everybody. Yes. But you didn't say it was expensive when we went after Osama bin Laden. No one said it was expensive. We just did it. Protect America. 45 million Americans without health insurance. Let's say you could find 3 or 4 states that made up 45 million Americans. Maybe let's say the whole West Coast. If, God forbid, somebody nuked the West Coast and got rid of the 3 or 4 states along there, would anyone stand up, and we knew who did it, would anyone stand up and says, let's not go after them, it's going to be pretty expensive, let's have hearings, let's do that. Of course not. And yet, you've got all these people unprotected. Where's Homeland Security for all these people that don't have insurance or can't afford it? What's wrong with us? Why are we getting involved in this political fight? You don't have to give up capitalism. You don't have to give up free enterprise. You don't have to give up any of that. We have it now with Medicare. Let's be competitive. But we can also say, living in this country, that there's some things that ought not to be based on the wealth of your parents or on what kind of a brain you were born with or your ability to compete. Some things just ought to be guaranteed because you're alive and you're living in America, you're a human being. And that ought to be, you ought to be able to get to a doctor. You ought to be able to eat. You ought to be able to get an education. And let's compete after that. After that, some of us will have bigger cars, bigger houses, more expensive vacations. Let's compete. I love it. I'm very competitive. I'll compete. But let's not compete on whether or not a kid can get to a doctor. I mean, what's wrong with us? Where is that 9/11 feeling now? And now politicians, they're all coming up with, well, if we do it this way, that's going to cost you more. There'll be a death panel. It's not us at our best. The nerve of us, the richest country in the world, to be okay with all these people without health insurance. So the first time, and by the way, if you're worried about your money, this will cost you money. Because when they're not insured, we pay for it. We pay for it in higher premiums ourselves to make up for that. And then when they get sick, they go to the hospital in the emergency room, which thankfully doesn't deny them. And that's the most expensive care of all. And then you get to the moral issue. By the time you get to the emergency room, sometimes it's too late. You haven't had all the health care in the meantime so that you wouldn't have to get to the emergency room in the first place. You think it's moral that rich people have a longer life expectancy than poor people? If your kid asked you about that, how would you answer it? Would you say it's okay, son, it's okay, daughter? No, you'd probably blush a little bit and say, well, no, that's not really right. And you know, just think of what you would tell your own child. And the truth is, inside, we're really a good people. I don't care what your politics are. I don't care how much you may, someone may hate liberals or Democrat, whatever it is. If there is a kid next door that's suddenly sick and the neighbor knocks on the door, could you get my child to the hospital? You wouldn't say, well, how much are you going to pay me? Of course not. You become a human being. And we do whatever we can to help this person because we are a good and decent people. There's no question. We saw that on 9/11. When there's a crisis, nobody is better than us. We send stuff all around the world to help in times of emergency. We really do. That's not being rah-rah. That's the truth. We're so good and so decent. And yet when it comes to politics, we just become selfish, nasty. Don't let the President of the United States of America speak to school kids. What's that about? I have suspicions. You know, why Barack Hussein Obama should not be allowed to speak to our school children. And I don't even have to say it and you're thinking it. There was no conceivable reason not to let the President of the United States speak to school kids. Do you know on 9/11 where George Bush was? Huh? Did anybody say, how dare he be speaking at the elementary school kids? He's corrupting them. What? 9/11, the World Trade Center was hit, so thank God they got to cut off his speech to the kids. I mean, that is just so, it's so mean-spirited. It is so ugly. You know, it's not the country we were raised in to have that kind of an argument. Oh, don't let the president speak to our kids. You know, it's like talk radio has gone insane in some areas. I mean, it really has. It's just so off the charts, so off the charts. Now, I'm giving you my partisan theory. I believe that talk radio is as vitriolic as it is today because, which just irks them to hear it, the liberals won. But liberals, and by the way, I call myself a liberal, so I'm not running away from the title, not progressive, I'm liberal. But I think the liberals won within the last 30 years. I'm not talking about this last election. I'm talking in general. Now, that doesn't mean we give conservative speeches. We talk conservatively. But every one of us in this room lives liberally. If you think about your kids, what music do they listen to? How do they dress? Who do they date? What are their private lives like? You could go to the most conservative neighborhood in America and their kids are watching the same programs, listening to the same music, talking about the same things, dating the same people. Their attitudes, for example, towards gays versus an older generation, night and day. The liberals won. And because we live liberally as a nation, I'm not saying we vote liberally. I'm not saying we give liberals, I'm not saying if you filled out a questionnaire, you wouldn't give a conservative answer. And you, in fact, may believe conservatively. But then Monday morning, you go back to being a liberal. When your kid says, hey, I'm going to do this, say, all right, but, you know, be careful. We live liberally. Because of that, that has changed in my lifetime. When I was younger, all the protest was on the left because America was a conservative nation. So all the movements were liberal movements. The civil rights movement, the labor movement, the women's movement, the environmental movement. The left was protesting against the conservative establishment. Well, finally, the liberals won those arguments. We made great strides in the area of civil rights, in women's rights and women's equality. Not perfect yet, but great strides. Barack Obama is president of the United States. We have an environmental consciousness that we used not to have. The liberals won. So now all the protest is on the right. Talk radio, Right to Life, whatever the groups are. They're the conservative groups. They're very few, you know, way out left. I mean, certainly the big protest groups are not on the left anymore. They're on the right. That's why you have conservative talk radio, by the way, because that's the way they can vent. And I think that that part is useful. I'm not suggesting we do away with, good Lord, I'm free speech. They have everyone on, let him preach, let him preach. But when we don't like what he says, we should stand up and give our point of view as well. So no, I'm not here for a second saying, you know, put a, you know, clamp the mouth of talk radio. Not at all. As conservative as they want to be, let them be. But please understand why you're getting this ranting of don't let the president speak in our schools. Be careful of health care because we'll have death panels. Come on, you don't honestly believe that. You know, if we stay, and I think most Americans understand that, but on the subject of health care, and I'll end with this, on the subject of the health care, and I'm not even gonna promote what program I told you what I think, but it's never going to pass. So I admit my way isn't going to work. I think it would work, but people won't support it. But that would be the easiest. We just should do that, and you know, Medicare for everyone and those that we'll charge people, and it'll be on a sliding scale based on your ability to pay, and let that be, you know. We pay taxes for all kinds of things. One other reason why it's a good idea, it's an economic issue. Why do you think the jobs go overseas? They go overseas because overseas companies can produce things not just because the wages are less, but one of the reasons the wages are less is that companies don't have to provide health insurance for their employees. You talk to any big employer in America and they will tell you that almost a third of the cost of an employee is for benefits. And well over half of that is for health care. So for this producing the same goods, it's more expensive in America because the employers here have to pay higher wages to take care of the benefits. But if the benefits were taken care of in Europe, the government provides the health care. So employers there can hire employees much cheaper. You get more people working, you produce goods at less cost, and therefore you can make more profit. You can do more business. And you talk to some big employers here, and they will agree that their health care costs are killing them. in terms of hiring employees. So you could, if we can, and we don't live in a society anymore where people keep the same employer, keep the same job for 40, 50 years. No one's getting a gold watch anymore. So therefore, we do go from company to company or from employment to employment, and that affects people's ability to keep their health insurance. It doesn't make sense anymore to have an employer-based health system. Why should whether or not you can take care of your kid be dependent on how nice your employer is, or even if you have an employer? That's absurd. Healthcare should be simply because you're a human being. That's when America's at its best. Take the good feeling that we had after 9/11 in terms of a response, the horrible feeling of what happened, but the feeling of helping each other out. Damn it, whatever's going on, what do you need? We're there. Firefighters coming from Oregon to New York City to help out. Not getting paid for it, you know, any appreciable amount of money. They just were doing it. Everybody just stepped up. Well, let's step up now. Let's not wait that the only time we're going to be responsive if there's a loud noise and an explosion. Our hearts don't need that. Thank you. Well, take questions?
Yeah, we're going to take questions, I guess.
Well, I agree that that is an excellent point. I would just add to that or an addendum. One of the reasons people wind up going to, and there are doctors in my family too, I hear it all the time, going to the emergency room for something that's really pretty basic. Well, a lot of the people go there because they don't have a doctor, because they can't afford a doctor, because they don't have the insurance. So you show up in an emergency room, and thankfully the emergency room takes care of it. But it's the most expensive kind of medical care, and we all wind up, of course, paying for it in the end anyway. So it's not like we're saving money by not having people have insurance. And by the way, the questions can be not just on what I talked about. It can be about showbiz. Yeah, I got too serious. You can, yeah. Well, I wouldn't, even though I'd like to totally agree with that, I can't honestly say that from my perspective. I think there's some excellent conservative columnists. So, I wouldn't say that writers, I would say there's a lot of intellectual heft to conservative thought. It's not something that I adhere to, but there's certainly some very smart and good writing journalists on the conservative side. If you say that if you took a poll of all journalists and do most of them wind up voting Democrat. I think that's probably true. But I would say that liberalism is more nuanced than conservatism. And I don't mean that as an attack, but you know, it's, you can put conservatism into shorter phrases. And I remember Kerry was, they were making fun of Kerry. Bush was making fun of Kerry during the campaign. You know, we don't do nuance. It was one of the people around, maybe, I forget which one, but one of the people around Bush says, you know, we don't do nuance here or whatever. And, you know, that's childish, to be honest. So I think that's more like, yeah, I think they probably wind up, but let's face it, most local papers are pretty conservative. You know, I've spent most of my life in Ohio, and I can tell you the newspapers there are conservative, almost without fail. Every once in a while, there's one that's, so this bit about, and plus newspapers are in such trouble now, and gosh, I hope we can save them. It would be horrible to do without newspapers. Yes?
I wanted to ask a question about the series for the show.
You're a lonely man.
In terms of how you all, you know, developed, did you all start with the original intent of the show to kind of be that sensationalist? Or was it
started like Phil Donahue, wasn't it?
Did you all maybe make that change because you all thought it?
Here's how it happened. I was drinking. No, I was, after, this is exactly how it happened. I had about 10 years on city council and mayor of Cincinnati. When that ended, I ran for governor. I finished in 81. 82, I ran for governor of Ohio, and I lost that race. I mean, I never had a chance. No one knew me outside Cincinnati, but it was a nice race. Anyway, I lost. Literally, that weekend, I was offered a job by the NBC affiliate in Cincinnati to anchor their news. What? I had no journalistic experience or anything like that, but they figured I knew the city, having been in the government for 10 years, and I was reasonably well-liked there, so that would be good, and they were lowest in the ratings. So that would be a good thing. We'll make you the news anchor. Well, I had no interest in being a news anchor, but I did want to do political commentary. And so we made a deal. They would let me anchor the news, but at the end of every newscast, I would do a commentary. And that was somewhat groundbreaking. The only other person in the country that was doing it at the time, this was 1982, was Walt Jacobson in Chicago. But, I mean, stations had editorials, but it was always the general manager, the station manager, but it wasn't the anchor. They always kept that line separated. So this was kind of an experiment, but they figured they were last in the ratings. And the truth is it caught on, and we became pretty dominant in the ratings. One day, this company, and I did that for 10 years. One day, the company that owned the station, the NBC affiliate where I did the news in Cincinnati, Channel 5, also owned talk shows. They owned Phil Donahue, Sally, Jesse Raphael. So one day, the CEO, Walter Barclay, takes me to lunch and says, Jerry, Phil's getting close to retirement. We're going to start another talk show, and you're the host. What's a talk show? I mean, you know, if you're a grown-up, you didn't know at that point. I never watched talk shows. I was working during the day. I mean, it just, and I don't mean that like I'm looking down my nose. I really didn't know much about talk shows. And what I knew about them, it wasn't that about, like, there'd be cooking segments and things like that, and I, you know, when it comes to food, the thing I make best are reservations. I didn't know anything. So, but they said, no, you know, you can make it political, but you're going to do it. So I was assigned it. I mean, I didn't audition. I didn't try out. And they let me do the news, too. So I would fly to Chicago in the morning to do the talk show, and then in the afternoon fly back because I did the news at 5:36 and 11 every night, well, Monday through Friday. And I did that for a year and a half, and that got to be too much, five times a week flying between Cincinnati and Chicago. So finally then the show started to catch on and I gave up the news and did the show full time. And it was just a normal talk show in the beginning. Now there were 20 talk shows at the time and everyone was trying to be Oprah. Everyone was, At the time, they called the demographic middle-aged housewives. And every talk show was trying to appeal to middle-aged housewives. So I thought, why not have a talk show for kids? And when I say kids, I meant high school and college, you know, late teens, early 20s. A fraternity party. So we said, from now on, we're only going to have young people in the audience, young people on stage, I mean, mostly, young people on stage, and young subject matter. That was the decision, to go young, not to go crazy. Well, young people are crazy. And they're much more open about their lifestyles. And then the show started going off the charts. Universal bought us. And when Universal bought us, they called us in and said, from now on, you're only allowed to do crazy. And that's true. So if someone calls us with a warm, uplifting story, we're not allowed to take it. We have to send them to another show. And that's strict rules. So even, you know, I could say I want to do a show tomorrow on the impact of inflation on the world bond market. They won't air it. So we're only allowed to air shows that are outrageous. And that's how that came about. So it wasn't a conscious decision to do that. It just became that, and now we're not allowed to go away from it. If I want to do my politics or something else, I have to do it on another show. I'm not allowed to do it on that. Yeah. Well, think about radio. No. here's what's happening. First of all, what we call reality television isn't reality television. It's a misnomer. There's nothing real about it. You create a fake situation, and then you ask people. What they really mean is it's generally unscripted, but it's not reality. You take people and you put them in a house like Big Brother, or you put them on an island like Survivor. You know, that's not reality. You're taking people and putting strangers on an island together and seeing if they can survive. So it's entertainment. So, you know, the curse of television is that whenever somebody does something that's successful, 50 others will quickly try to follow and be the same. So for a while you had all the game shows, and then you had all the sitcoms, and then you had all the mysteries, and then and now they're going through this. You know, I would argue that we probably were the first reality show, but ours wasn't fake. In other words, these are, for better or worse, real people reacting to a situation that really exists in their life, not a situation we created. They come to the show with whatever baggage they have. So the answer then, what you would do, so right now, it's commercial television. The networks and the stations want to make money. So like any product, you don't produce a product that people won't buy. You'll try it, but if they're not buying it, you take it off the shelf. Entertainment's no different. It doesn't matter how sincere I can be and say, I want to say this. They'll say, fine, do it on your own time. We're not paying you all this money, and then no one's watching you. So when people say, oh, you do it for ratings, well, what that means is we're doing it for the public. It's free enterprise. People will buy. The argument is, why are people watching it? You can argue that. You know, I wouldn't watch it. My own show.
Number one, though, is a talk show. Oprah's inspirational, so it's not.
So it can. You can. Yes, you can get. I mean, Oprah's an example. Let's be honest. Most television is pretty mainstream. You know, we get a lot of conversation about our show. But come on, 99% of what you see on television is very middle America. If you're African American or you're a minority, you're on one of the side networks. You know, for years, American television was nothing but upper middle class white. And if you were African American, you better be a doctor working in the suburbs like Cosby. Or you don't make the major networks. Everything is Seinfeld, Friends, Frasier. It's all upper class white. Now, I grew up middle class white, and it's, you know, I don't mind that perspective, but it shouldn't be the only perspective in America. If you're doing the news, you have to speak middle American. If you're African American, you have to speak like a white person from St. Louis. So I don't think we're on the fringes at all. I think most television is very vanilla, very vanilla.
Can I ask a completely frivolous question just for...
And then him, yeah.
Okay. Oh. Well, you go first.
Yeah. Okay, well, one, thankfully, that doesn't happen. Number two, you should know, first of all, our show doesn't deal with any serious issues, to be honest. It's dating. It doesn't mean they're not angry, but the next day they're dating someone else. And let me tell you, when the show's over, they're backstage. Jerry, can we have some pictures? Where's a good restaurant to go to here in Chicago? Would you hold my kid while we snap a picture? Love you, man. You know, it's television. They know when they go out there, it's just like every celebrity that goes on The Tonight Show. They perform. Now, the stories have to be true. So when they get angry, they're really angry. And they use the language, well, frankly, they use the same language you use in a similar situation. And let me say that. Here's what I mean. I could take an English professor from Harvard, most educated person you can find. He comes home one night and finds his wife in bed with a next-door neighbor. Do you think he's going to say, "Forsooth, my dear, what is it that I have found?" He'd say, "Get the F out of here," and he'd start screaming and yelling. And if they're two college kids, and one guy tells his roommate that he's messing around with his girlfriend, they're going to fight. They're going to wrestle. You were in college. You know that. So we shouldn't pretend that it's always, "Oh, I find that so disturbing."
Yeah. Well, what kind of screening do your producers do to select the right stories?
Oh, they do a lot. I mean, they've been doing the show for 19 years. They're good at it. You get corroborating evidence sometimes. You know, if they say we went there and then he did this, then, well, you have the receipts from that place, or they get, you know, they interview other people. So they're good at that. That's what they do. That's their job. Plus, they sign in front of the lawyers with a video camera rolling. This is all true, you know, waivers, everything. Oh, the lawyers go through everything. By the time it gets on the show, now, I'm not saying we've never been fooled. Nor am I saying there are occasions, particularly around holidays, we'll do an obvious spoof show. Christmas with the Klan, you know. I mean, when it's obviously, you know, we're doing obviously tongue-in-cheek, over the top. But on the normal course of the year, when you see shows, they're real.
Are those people paid to come on your show?
No, because if you paid them, they would make up stories.
Do you fly them in?
Well, sure, yeah, yeah. Because they come from all over the country. Yeah.
What's the next act for you? You've had many different career lifetimes. What's the next act?
Well, I'm doing the musical now, which really is something so different than anything I've ever done. Singing and dancing in a play. I mean, everyone who knows me, I mean, just grew up, say, "What?" And it's so great because, you know, your family comes and, you know, they love me, I love them. And they're so, I mean, even my own daughter, it's like surprise. It's like, "But you sang good." Like, you know, wouldn't anyone say, "Yeah, I knew you could do it"? Nobody. No one ever comes and says, "Oh, honey, I knew you could do it." Yeah. So it's been a lot of fun doing that. And I enjoy it. I'm at a point in my life where I do things because they're either fun or because it's something like political that I really believe in. But otherwise, just for fun. I'm going to, in next month, I start in Vegas. I'm going to take the finalists from America's Got Talent, and we're going to do a Vegas act for 4 months in Planet Hollywood, where I'll put on a show with them. That starts October 7th, so that's the next thing. Plus, I continue, obviously, every Monday and Tuesday doing my television show. We tape them in 2 days. I do 3 shows on Monday, 2 on Tuesday, and then I fly to where I'm going.
I want to go back to healthcare.
I'll get you next. Yes?
Doesn't it make a little bit of sense that the reason this country hasn't been able to band together to pretty much go after the war on healthcare reform the way that we did terror, because there really hasn't been a catastrophic event to take place to kind of band the country together the way it did on 9/11?
Yes, you're exactly right. And that's my point is, does it really take a bomb to bring us together? Disease gets us much more slowly. There isn't going to be a...
You know, but I think the proof is that it does. Don't you think?
That what?
That it does take a bomb to bring...
Yeah, that's the point I'm making. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm saying, come on, let's not have to wait for that. Recognize people are dying now, living shorter lives, living unhealthy lives. They're not getting the attention they need until it's too late. And we're better than that. We should just say it's unconscionable. We're not going to have competition. We're not going to compete on that. You know, your kid, honestly, poor people love their children just as much as rich people do. They really do. They're not morally inferior to rich people. But we kind of live with that assumption because our conscience is soothed by that notion. Well, I don't know why they're not taking care of the kids. Well, why doesn't he have a job? You know, he's so lazy. Remember welfare queens, those people on welfare, they're so lazy. You know, they're getting away with everything, welfare cheats. Good Lord, I don't know one wealthy person that would say, you know what, I'll change my life for being on welfare because they get it so great. You know, it's like, you know, we become so, I made it, why can't they? Life is luck. Life is luck. Not one person in this room had anything to do with the decision to be born. You didn't have anything to do with the decision to be born, to whom you'd be born, in what community you'd be born, what age you'd be born, what kind of health you would have to be born in with, what kind of brain, anything. It's all a gift. And maybe 1% of what kind of life we have is based on, you know, what we're able to accomplish. But I could take the most successful man in America, Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, pick them. If they were born in Ethiopia, they would have been dead by the age of 5. So what good does all that do? It's all luck. And, you know, and that's why we thank God every day for that we got these breaks. But that means we got to say thank you. And the way you say thank you under any moral ethic is to give something back. And the way we give something back is to make sure that everybody at least can take care of their families, you know. And that's health care.
Well, we're running out of time. Time for one more question.
Yes.
I'll give it to Rachel here.
I think you want to be on Tuesday's show. You got an issue, don't you, huh? Let's hear it, huh? Well, authenticity. I mean, if you had a, you know, I don't know, you can pick one word, but I think if people are authentic, one, they'll be honest. Two, they won't put on airs. They won't live with the pressure of trying to be someone they're really not, just because they think this person won't love me if I'm, you know, be authentic and be kind. Maybe that's it. If you're kind, you won't do bad things. You won't want to hurt anybody. If you're kind, you won't be a racist. If you're kind, you won't start a war. unless for self-defense. If you're kind, you won't steal. If you're kind, I mean, you know, it's not, it's whatever you teach your child, at what age do we suddenly forget that? Be authentic and be kind. And take care of yourself and each other.
I'm going to ask one frivolous question we go here. How did the Jerry chant come about anyway? Where did that come from on the show?
We had a guy who stuttered.
Are you kidding?
No. I think it started really with Ricky Lake. I think, I remember her show had go Ricky, or something like that. So then the kids in the audience, you know, at one show, and then when they saw other people do it, then they start, and now everyone, now
it's a wave,
now it's a wave, yeah. It's a wave, yeah.
But nobody's done it here, but thank you so much.
Thank you.